Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we've got some weather moving in after absolutely gorgeous days here, pushing 80 degrees.
Yes, and after a slight respite, we'll have some more weather next week.
Yeah, that's part of the El Nino system, right? One after another when they start up.
Well, California, the West Coast is going to be hit within hours with this river. What do they call it?
Atmospheric river.
Tons more of rain, like they haven't had enough.
There you go. Okay, we are in our 14th year with the radio project. That began this month, January, and we say goodbye to January today. Not a big fan of January. Now, something about February always feels just better, so I'm welcoming February coming in tomorrow. We are on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media campus here, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where I'm darn proud of the fact that a lot of content has been archived there, going back to our, really, the first week of the show back in 2011. So there's 13 full years of broadcasts at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, once a month, we hope to bring him in once a month. Usually works out that way. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. Jeff Buchanan retired after a 37-year Army career in 2019, in addition to commanding 6,000 troops on the southwest border. He led the military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria devastated that island. He also had four tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan, a graduate of the UA and its ROTC program. He's homegrown. General Buchanan advises Homeland Security. He's one of five commissioners for the Arizona Game and Fish Department Commission, and he is an advisor also to Vet Voice Foundation. As if he didn't have enough to do, he's a deputy volunteer, deputy sheriff in Santa Cruz County, where he resides with his wife on a small ranch outside of Patagonia, which is, of course, a dozen or so miles just north of the border. General, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Bill. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And we always have so much to talk about because we have the wildlife issues. We have military issues. We'll talk a little bit about the border. Let's begin, though, with the wildlife issues. We have a rabid bobcat, unfortunately, in Saguaro National Park. It's a problem. I mean, how do you hunt down a rabid animal? Their behavior is obviously very erratic, right?
Yeah. So, first of all, if you know, rabies is endemic. It's endemic to this area, and this is why it's so important to get your pets vaccinated and keep them up to date. But carnivores and bats, in particular, are subject to rabies. And as I understand it, I'm not a disease expert, but as I understand it, if an animal's rabid, you know, they're going to die. Humans, if it's not treated, is almost always fatal. So always a big concern if we have evidence of a rabid animal. The behavior is such that, you know, bobcats are pretty hard to see. They usually are very elusive, you know, private animals and everything. But if you see a bobcat sitting by the side of a road that is not afraid of people or something like that, then chances are there's something really wrong with it.
And you could have a bobcat in the backyard. Normally when you come outside, it will move, it will jump the fence or the wall. But if it just like stays there, that could be a problem.
That's exactly right. You know, when I was a kid, I was up in the Huachuca Mountains in southeast Arizona near my hometown, and a friend of mine, we were both, I guess, 16, old enough to drive. We were rappelling on some cliffs there, and while we're sitting at the top of the cliff, a rabid Cotamundi came up and bit my friend in the back. You know, it's just the craziest thing. And so he got the full 16 shots in the abdomen.
Oh, my. And 16 so it, shots?
That's what it used to be. I'm not sure what it is these days. But it's you can get inoculated against rabies, but obviously we have treatment options available if you're infected as well.
What's the news on the jaguar? The feds, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, says no to reintroduction.
Yeah, I
is
think
that a temporary thing? Or,
well, I haven't dealt with the Fish and Wildlife Service on this.
And that would be over in Gila,
in
the Gila.
Right, in New Mexico.
Southwest New Mexico, right by our wonderful sponsor, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. And the Gila is a wonderful place.
It is. It's beautiful wilderness
beautiful
area.
Wilderness. So I guess the animals will not be reintroduced there.
Yeah, you know, we've had a number of jaguar sightings in the recent years in the Sky Islands of Southeastern Arizona and the Huachucas, Chiricahuas, Santa Rita's, Patagonia Mountains, I believe. And in almost every case, it's been lone males that we're sure of anyway, if we're sure of the sex of the animal. And they, you know, cat behavior is such that the males are always looking to expand territory and they get pushed out by other males. I think it's safe to say we have jaguars in and out of the United States and predominantly in southeastern Arizona.
In transit.
Yeah, in transit. But they don't stay here. I can't see them staying here unless we have females start coming across in a breeding population. Mm-hmm. And I think if we start to see breeding populations of jaguars, that may change the mindset of the Fish and Wildlife Service.
The wolf reintroduction, and we talked a little bit about this last month, would you consider that successful?
Extremely so, yeah. Introduced, it's 25 years in the program, and
right.
We're now upwards, I think the last count was 243 wolves in both Arizona and New Mexico. So being very successful, at the same time, trying to achieve a good balance interest for what's best for the conservation of this species and other species, plus taking care of all the interests of, you know, environmental groups, cattle ranchers, sportsmen, and taking all that in and doing what's best for the wildlife is an important issue. That's what we in the Game and Fish do.
Do you have any idea how many pairs we might have in the Southwest? Breeding pairs?
I can get you the answer.
No,
like I said, it's 243 wolves.
Oh, it's that many. Okay.
Right. So those are individual wolves.
Okay. But,
you know.
Chances are there's a good number.
Right. There's probably
a mix of both in there. Men and females.
Probably 70 pairs between, you know, Arizona and New Mexico
in that
neighborhood. But it's expanding.
Yeah, that's
they
good.
They are continuing to grow. We're just I don't want to go back into it, but
yeah,
very important that we keep them south of I-40 so that we don't have a mix with the gray
wolf. You mentioned that the last time. Yeah,
right.
you don't want to mix the species. Keep them north of the interstate, right?
No, we keep the Mexican wolf south of I-40.
South of I-40. Okay, right. All right. The Arizona Game and Fish, you have regular meetings, and are they open to the public?
Yeah, so we have a commission meeting roughly once a month. I think it's 10 meetings a year. And we rotate where we're going to do them in different parts throughout the state. Our last meeting was in mid-January in Phoenix on the 19th. And our next meeting is in about 2 weeks, Friday, whatever day that is. I think it's it's the second Friday in February, but it's in Yuma.
That would be the 9th.
And so, first of all, anybody can watch the commission meeting. It's broadcast live on TV. But the other thing you can do is you can attend virtually, if you will, and even make comments. And the way to do that from Tucson, the best way to do it, is to go to the regional Game and Fish office just off of Speedway, south of Speedway and west of I-10, and attend, and then you can submit what's called a blue slip, and then you have 3 minutes to talk about whatever you want to talk about. We generally do that call to the public to open these meetings, and we start these meetings at 8:00 on the day that it's scheduled. You can get all the details on the Game and Fish website, but the point is, anybody can watch And if you go to a game and fish office, regardless of where in the state the meeting's being held, you can ask questions or make comments.
Do you guys then reintroduce certain species of fish around the area of different lakes?
Yeah, we
How
have.
Does that
In
work?
Fact, we've you know, so,
like trout or
yes. Yeah, so we have, I think it's 6 hatcheries in the state, and a number of them raise trout, and we use that to we stock trout throughout the state in
that
lakes and streams.
That could be really
streams.
Good eating trout.
Oh, they are great, and we have 2 species that are native to Arizona. Gila and Apache trout. And Apache trout.
I didn't know that. 2 native species.
2 native species. Gila trout are both in Arizona and New Mexico, and Apache trout just in our state. It's our state fish. And just this year, or in 2023, Apache trout were delisted by the Fish and Wildlife Service, so they're no longer in danger.
Mm.
And the White Mountain Apache tribe has been working that species since 1954. Great partnership between us at the state level, between the federal government, to make this fish have as vibrant presence in the state as it did historically.
So they
and
got
it's
some
a
healthy
great success
fish up there.
It is,
yeah.
Very much so.
All right, let's take a pause right here. When we come back with General Jeffrey Buchanan, we'll talk about the border. He knows a lot about what's going on the border. But right now, General, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. You love bakery goods, don't you?
I do.
Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And they now have a liquor license. And I'm not sure if it's, I know they can start soon with their wine and champagne for your mimosas with your breakfast. That's coming to Mona's Danish Bakery. They're open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning. And they do a great lunch as well there. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with General Buchanan right after we take a break.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. One of our great contributors is General Jeff Buchanan, and he's a commissioner for the Arizona Game and Fish, has tremendous background with the military, almost like four decades of military service. He's worked on the border. I think you had in your command, General, you had about 6,000 troops on the southwest border. When was that?
2018 and 2019, Bill. It was dominantly Army and Marine Corps, and we were deployed really from Brownsville to San Diego mm-hmm. in support of Customs and Border Protection.
So what's changed on the border?
Well, I think a number of things have changed. You know, the dynamic back in 2018 was the dominant people that we would see coming across the border were family groups of people seeking opportunity, mostly out of Nicaragua or Honduras, Guatemala, you know, countries south of Mexico. And now you see people from all over the world. They are...
Now you got a mini UN coming across, right?
And the dynamic has changed. They're not coming across trying to sneak in, if you will, under the wire and find a job. They're coming across with the sole intention of applying for asylum. So instead of making their way across and then trying to make it on to Tucson or Phoenix or LA or whatever the case may be, they're, you know, many of them are trying to find a Border Patrol agent to turn themselves in and claim asylum.
And I'm curious on that turning yourself in for asylum. I wonder what the percentage is that are successful when they do that.
Well, I don't know. I do know we have a tremendous backlog in cases, and this is part of the problem, especially if they're released into the country with the promise of a court date two or 3 years down the road.
I mean, who's going to show up for
that? The majority of them do not show up. And so, you know, there's a problem with our system and how it is being implemented, which leads to border security problems. I think we need solid border security, and the Mexican government wants solid border security as well. But one of the drivers of a unsecure border is our lack of a coherent immigration policy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many presidential administrations for both parties
cannot
have been trying
agree.
To train this
cannot
for years.
Cannot agree on it. It's been
so
going
I think we
on
gotta,
for decades. This
we,
is the, yeah.
So ultimately, we've got to fix both. We got to put the Band-Aid on and fix the border security. But at the same time, I think we really need to think about who we are as a country, what do we want for an immigration policy, and then how do we implement it so that our brave Border Patrol agents are actually able to enforce the laws that we have on the books. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem.
What about in your own home there in Patagonia?
You know, it's been fairly quiet. It's very, but of course, the country is pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that the Tucson sector of the Border Patrol has been one of the busiest in the country.
Yes.
But it's less about remote areas like where I live. And
do you
more
worry
about
ever about your own security the there or no?
No.
No.
I'm pretty capable.
I bet. I kind of hesitated to ask, but I knew the answer to that one. Let's talk a little bit about, you gave a keynote address in San Antonio, Texas over the weekend. Your address was about heroes. Our concept of heroes lately we look at people like Taylor Swift, and she's like this
heroine. I think if you ask your typical American who their heroes are, mm-hmm. you're going to get answers like actors, musicians,
sure.
professional athletes.
Yeah.
And I think the issue is we've confused celebrity status or being famous with being heroic. And it's not that famous people can't be heroes, but just because they're rich, talented, beautiful, and famous doesn't make them heroic. If you go back to the...
Maybe if they've done something like to really help a bunch of people,
right.
That
so
would
let's
qualify
take,
let's maybe
take
as a
LeBron
hero.
James.
Okay.
I could make a strong argument that LeBron James is a hero.
Okay.
But it's not about playing basketball. It's about what he does for inner city education.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go back and you look at the word hero and you try to understand where it comes from the ancient Greeks. There's only two requirements to bearing a hero.
What are they?
Courageous acts and a noble purpose. And, you know, courage, I think we tend to think of, you know, acting bravely or acting, overcoming your fears or acting in spite of your fears. But the root of courage is the French word cœur, which means heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so courage is all about acting with a full heart. And, you know, the analogy works in Spanish too. Coraje and corazón. It's the same
heart
word.
Of a hero,
it's about
right.
The
yeah.
Heart.
Uh-huh.
And a noble purpose, I can't think of a purpose more noble than serving other people.
Mm-hmm.
So at least in those terms, heroes act with a full heart and serve others.
What
and that's
was the
why,
reaction from your audience?
Oh, well, they were, you know, I was speaking to a pretty friendly
group.
Were
you speaking to the choir?
Yes. So they were all positive. Yeah. But I told a story about a young soldier, and we don't have time to talk about it today, but...
Well, give him a brief summation.
So it was this soldier that got awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, our nation's second highest award for heroism, on the 26th of February 2007. It was the day after the Academy Awards ceremony, and all of the media in the country was focused on the two big winners of the night, which were the movies The Departed and Little Miss Sunshine. And those are both great movies, and
yeah.
I've seen them.
Yeah,
and it's great entertainment, but it's not necessarily heroic. And mm-hmm. this young man, Private First Class Stephen Sanford, what he did is eye-watering. But nobody had ever heard of Sanford, so I told his story.
Mm.
And
can you give me a brief the story?
He,
what was the bottom? I'm curious.
He was a young man in Mosul, Iraq, on the 19th of November of 2005. Just did some heroic action to try to save guys' lives. His fellow soldiers that were fighting a group of Al-Qaeda terrorists, and he got shot a number of times, twice in one leg, once in another leg, once in the back, shrapnel all over him. In the meantime...
And he's still moving.
Still moving, still dragging people out of a building, performing CPR on a sergeant until he passed out from his own loss of blood. It's unbelievable what these young men and women will do to take care of each other. Now that to me, you know, acting with a full heart and a noble purpose, serving others, that's truly heroic. But the point is, none of those people had ever heard of Stephen Sanford.
No.
You know, here I gotta finalize the punchline, if you will.
Go ahead.
So he was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross by General Peter Pace, who was our chairman, Marine Corps general, our four-star chairman of the Joint Chiefs at the time. And as General Pace is pinning the Distinguished Service Cross on Sanford, his hands are shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And Private First Class Sanford, who's now medically retired, by the mm-hmm. way, looks down on him and says, "What's wrong, sir?" And he says, "Well, this is the first time I've ever awarded anybody a Distinguished Service Cross." And Private Sanford says, "Well, that's okay, sir. This is the first time I ever got one."
So you saw a lot of people over there in your four tours of Iraq and one in Afghanistan that performed what we would consider heroic acts. Are the acts usually, do people dig deep because they want to, you're in a close environment with a lot of buddies. You want to help your buddies. Is that kind of a bottom line?
I think that's a dominant motivation.
Yes.
You know, if you ask people why they serve, all the reasons are there. Sometimes people came to it for a job or they got recommended by a family member, or it might be love of country and true patriotism. But, you know, in the end, we're trying to take care of the mission and do the right thing and take care of each other. Take care of those men and women on our left and right, the people we serve with. You know, the love you have of your fellow soldier, Marine, or sailor, airman, is it's pretty phenomenal. And it can help motivate you to overcome your fears to do some incredible things. So I saw a lot of that. I saw people.
It's not that just, people are not, that your soldiers are not afraid. They overcome. Sure. They overcome their fear. They dig deep.
Yeah, they act. And I'm wondering
how do they do that? How do they dig so deep?
It's, you know, I think it's just, it's, it, I would like to think that it's acting motivated by love rather than hate. Mm. It's not about trying to hate somebody else. It's about loving your fellow soldiers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Quick note on Ukraine. I believe I read that just in this morning's New York Times. The head of the CIA saying he believes Putin is being weakened by the war in Ukraine. However, couple of weeks ago on this show, we had this expert on Russian affairs from the University of Arizona on our Monday one-on-one who said Putin is as strong as ever. So I don't know what to believe.
I think if you're looking at Putin, that's one question. If you're looking at the Russian military, that's a different question. I believe the Russian military has been weakened significantly by the Ukraine.
The 2 years of the
by
war.
By 2 years of war. But even in the first month, they were weakened because they demonstrated the operation, a complete lack
the operation
of competence.
Went south.
Right. A lack of competence, inability to do
they couldn't
logistics,
take the airfield.
Poor leadership.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
So the Russian military has suffered and continues to suffer. But I'm not an expert on Putin, but logic defies me with how he gets reelected with such popularity, you know, and the
who
here's
knows?
One thing. I know that I am not a Russian.
Yeah.
And so I don't have as deep an understanding of what Russian culture is as
all
I
right.
should.
General Buchanan, always a pleasure. We'll see you in a month or so. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition, the final day of January. So we'll say goodbye to January, be in the rearview mirror, and welcome in February. Great time of year to go by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They are ready with all your spring beautiful spring plants. They've got wonderful accessories at their sister business, Zocalo Village. I don't think anybody in Arizona's got a larger, more diverse selection of pottery than Zocalo Village, which is part of the Green Things family on their 13-acre site. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business. And they're open daily. They didn't get off the bus yesterday, as they say. And this gentleman who is my guest in studio didn't get off the bus yesterday. It's Hank Amos, fourth generation, really, with Tucson Realty and Trust Company, which was incorporated under the laws of the territory of Arizona in December of 1911. And then they adopted that very distinctive logo, the bullseye, as its logo. Hank, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. We like to bring you in as we begin kind of a new year, and you've been able to reflect over the commercial, and to a certain extent, commercial's what you follow, but real estate, they do kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Residential and commercial.
Residential and commercial.
They do.
There is the connection. So where do you want to begin?
We can start off with residential, and then kind of go into commercial, and you know, the common theme here is really interest rates. You know, that's affected both markets. So, you know, residential really slowed down. Volume was off about 14.2%. Sales were off 17.1%. And the bottom line was the rise in interest rates, and you combine that with the massive increase in home values, right, put prices pretty high. And when the interest rates went up to about 7% or so, all of a sudden people are saying, wait a minute, I can't afford that home anymore because it's priced so high. It was cheap when things were going up and I'm paying 2% or 3%. That's cheap money and nobody cared. I can afford that, right? Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden the music stopped, the rates went up, and it really put a damper on the market. So going forward, what's going to help a little bit, or what does help a little bit, is there's still cash buyers out there, but something's got to give. You can't have high interest rates and you can't have home values where they're at. And I think, you know, something's going to have to give eventually. I think the market is going to be pretty much the same. I don't think it really is going to improve that much in 24. And people are talking about all these interest rate cuts that the Fed are going to make. I'll bet you today the Fed doesn't make a rate cut. It's just not going to happen.
That's the word that they're not. They're just going to hold steady. That's
they're
going to
hold
I'm
steady.
Hearing.
So they're, you know, the pundits are saying, hey, we're going to have 6 rate cuts this year.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't see it. Inflation's still 3%, right?
Yeah.
Their target's 2%. We're still 18 to 20% above where we were when all this started, and it hasn't gone down. And you go to the grocery store or you go out to restaurants right now.
And it feels like when you go out, that it feels like it's costly.
It is. And it's in the back of your mind. You're like, I'm paying $40, $50 for a steak, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about it. And anyway, I don't see the interest rates going down. So I think, you know, in 24, more of the same, and I think inventory is going to remain tight. And the reason being is, why am I going to sell my house when I got a mortgage at 2 or 3%,
mm-hmm.
right? When I got to go buy something that's, you know, expensive. So if I'm going to downsize, maybe I'm not downsizing. If I was thinking about upsizing, I don't think I'm going to upsize right now because interest rates are too high, the homes are too high, and so everybody's kind of waiting. And then you're having that issue with the same issues with our folks from back east who want to come out here to the warm weather. They're like, well, I don't know if I want to sell my home. I'm at 2 or 3%.
Yeah, just stay put for a while.
So I think you're just going to see status quo for a while. There could be deterioration maybe in home prices where it starts to come down a little bit. If we go into a recession, you'll definitely see deterioration in home values. And by the way, I get these stats from Long Realty, so I appreciate that.
Okay, so the real estate, in your end of it, the commercial is, of course, very dependent as well on the interest rates, right?
Absolutely. And so what we saw was the markets were really hot, and I'm going to kind of get into that in some of the submarkets here that we're talking about, like industrial, business, retail. But here's what happened. The corner turned in 2023, and the market cooled off. And so what you had was rising interest rates, expenses went up, you know, and think about insurance and all, think about construction costs. Cap rates are still low. So people think, oh, low cap rates mean higher value, okay? So the values are still high, interest rates went up, and then there's the uncertainty of what's going to happen in the market, right? So it's just kind of dim the lights on the commercial real estate market. And because of all those things I mentioned, it's really difficult for these deals to pencil out for new deals. I'm going to buy something now.
A deal might look like it could happen, but then it doesn't, as you say, pencil out.
It doesn't pencil out. And that's because of the expenses. It's because of the cap rates. It's because of the interest. And something has to give again, right? Either the values have to come down or the interest rate has to come down. And also, it's much tougher to get a loan now. So the banks aren't stupid. They see that the economy can get a little bit worse. So their lending standards, right, have definitely tightened up to a large degree. And so you have to check more boxes to get a commercial loan. And the lenders want more money down, right, to do something. So they're protecting their downside while the market is kind of tough right now. I think, too, that if we go into a recession, think deal economics, you know, the commercial real estate market can get a lot worse. So I see, again, more of the same, some deterioration in value in commercial real estate going into 24. People think that when can it come back? You know, I don't think it's going to happen in late quarter, third quarter of this year, possibly. It might happen in the fourth quarter. I think things aren't going to start turning around until 2025. But if we have a recession, then it's a whole different world.
You were very bullish when we talked to you. 2022 was really good, as I recall, you talking about the commercial end of things here in town. You had a really good year. I'm just wondering about 2023 compared to that and then the previous year.
Right. So I think we talked about this where I was concerned about what's going to happen in 2023.
That's exactly right.
And that the market was going to turn because of interest rates and what was kind of going on and the talk. And that's exactly what happened. It played out exactly. But 21 and 22 are really strong, you know, for commercial real estate, and commercial, you know, meaning retail, office, industrial, multifamily, right? Mm-hmm. So we can talk about those in a little bit.
Yeah, why don't we take the break here, and then we'll get into the different sectors and see what's looking good and what is kind of lukewarm at this point with Hank Amos from Tucson Realty and Trust. Buckmaster Show on a midweek edition, final day of January. Our live line when we do our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cunada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition on the final day of January. Hank Amos is with us. Hank is the CEO of Tucson Realty and Trust. Probably been talking with Hank. Well, I've been in town now 36 years and probably interviewed Hank at least once or twice a year, probably for 30 years.
Yep.
First with my TV show and now on radio. And so Hank has seen a lot of developments come and go, but right now, what is the hot area of commercial real estate, Hank Amos?
You know, the hottest market right now, it used to be multifamily. We'll talk about that. The hottest
apartments,
market, right?
When you say multifamily.
Yeah, apartments,
okay.
Right.
All right.
The hottest market right now is industrial. And the proof of it really is like Tucson, we received last year in supply into our market about 1.9 million square feet, and yet our vacancy only went up to 5.5%. So what's happened is you're seeing all these tenants coming in. Logistic tenants are coming in. They've been a key driver of our demand. And also warehouse and distribution, right? Kind of by the airport.
Not by the airport. It seems like it's like one warehouse after another.
Yeah,
out
they've
there
been
now.
Really, really been building a lot. And so what happens is our
and it's not just Amazon. It's other.
It's others, right? And so our average rent logistics is driving it, right? So the average rent in Tucson for airport, I mean for industrial property is about $10.70, right? So you compare that to Southern California, where the rate is about $18. And so we have the proximity
per
square foot.
Okay.
So our proximity to trade ports, right? The Mexican, U.S.-Mexican border, which we were just talking about off air. The ports of Los Angeles, Long Beach, they're a driver because our rates are lower. And so it's coming here. So, but the one thing too is has happened is our rent growth did drop a little bit, right? So it's down to about 3.9%, which is stabilized. It was up at 7.7%. So it really went up a little bit. Some interesting things to talk about is in industrial, which I think is amazing, is American Battery Factory, right? Selected Tucson as its first gigafactory in the United States.
Yeah, how's that going? They broke ground for that?
Yeah. So yeah. $1.2 billion investment's going to be made to build 2 million square feet. And start off with about 300 jobs, and they're going to go up to about 1,000 jobs. So
out by the airport.
Out there, right. And it's just, it's crazy, you know, what's kind of going on right now in our market. But to kind of highlight the slowdown that we're talking about, the industrial market averaged in sales, but you know, for the last 2 years, about $215 million. but they only did $109 million last year. So you can see the slowdown happening a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we are getting, you know, this onshoring that's coming in. We're getting a little bit of that because they go to Mexico, but they need a distribution space or whatever. That's been the big driver. That's the number. That's the hot market right now.
Well, what I heard you say is it's basically half the cost of doing warehousing here than it would be over on the coast in California.
Just about, yeah.
And well, that's got to be very attractive. That bodes well, I would think, for Tucson.
Well, it does. And then when you think about the political situation, the taxes that are happening, mm-hmm. people are in California are looking like, you know, maybe I need to move out. And they want to come to Arizona. They don't want to go. Well, they might go to Texas, right?
Yeah.
But they look at Arizona. And then we have, like I said, we're close to those two major ports plus the border.
All right. Before we continue with Hank Amos, I want to talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Makes a great getaway. Only about a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org, and you will be very tempted with all the outdoor activities like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Check it out, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. All right, industrial space looking pretty good. And what about multi-family, commonly referred to as apartment buildings?
Do right. So, for years, we've been talking, and what's the hottest thing that's driving commercial real estate? Mm-hmm. And it was multifamily. I mean, multifamily was on fire. It's the pond now. I mean, nothing's happening in multifamily.
Why? We reached a point where there were enough apartments? Or?
Well, it was being driven basically by sales, you know, and so when you look at it, the last 3 years in multifamily, sales averaged $1.1 billion a year. Last year, they only did $170 million.
Wow, that's huge.
So you go from 1.1 on the average for the past 3 years, a big drop. And that's because what I talked about earlier was that higher expenses combined with more expensive financing, weaker rent growth, and tighter lending practices, right, has made it tough for these guys to sell. Now, they haven't been developing either, and so there's only about 2,100 units that are on the market coming. We've seen record low. So we had a record low vacancy of 4.7%, like in mid-2021. It's now 8.5%, right? Mm. So it's gone up a little bit. And the laggards in this market where we haven't seen much rent growth was Oro Valley and the Catalina Foothills area because rents got too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided, hey, I need something more affordable. Rents right now average about $1,151, right? But that's still 40% lower than Phoenix, right?
Wow.
So, you know, that's pretty good.
Mm, much lower than Phoenix. All right. Another sector we want to talk about, retail, and how is that doing?
So retail, it's hanging along. It's doing better. Retail is about, I think they grew 5.7% is where their vacancy rate has been, right? So it's improved that much over the last 2 years. The main thing that's been driving retail is the expansion of gyms, entertainment center retailers, medical, think about urgent care, auto stores. Those are the things that are driving retail right now. And as far as on the sales side, what you're seeing is, you know, those triple net leases, those single tenant triple net leases like the Jack in the Box and some of these auto stores and mm-hmm. some of these coffee shops, that's where the sales have been.
Triple net leases means that
the tenant is paying for everything.
Oh.
Yeah, the tenant is paying for everything.
Wow.
The affordability is good. You look at our average rate is about $18 per square foot. But compared to the national level, that's $25 per square foot. But the sales volume, right? So we were doing about $700 million in 21. We're down to $199 million. So again, a big drop in sales, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all driven by cap rates being too low, mm-hmm. which is the value's too high, mm-hmm. and interest rates going too high, and the lending standards and everything.
How about these kind of like ma and pa type, you see them all over Tucson on the corner, and there might be like four, maybe five stores, and a couple of them may be vacant. I mean, what's going on there? I mean, are we kind of infilling some of this or no?
Yeah, we're definitely infilling. So that's what I'm saying. So when you say that,
when I see
the
vacancy
rate has over the last 2 years has improved.
Okay,
right. So it was higher during the pandemic, but now it's come down to 5.7, mm-hmm. and it's kind of stabilized. That's a good vacancy rate.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I see these storage unit places. They're just going up.
Like, self-storage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Self-storage.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a giant one over on Fort Lowell. It's like three or four stories. And I'm told that for it's an investment-wise, it's a real good investment for the owner because basically people, you know, they rent these out and there's not a lot of upkeep.
So I used to be in
self-storage. So what's the deal?
I was doing self-storage, but okay. I kind of got out of it only because the cap rates, you know, it became too expensive to build. And now everybody seems to find that, you know, self-storage is big. And that's
yeah,
why you
big.
See it in
that's
Tucson,
why,
right?
Yeah.
So there was too much competition. But what happens is you analyze a market and you see how many units there are, how many people there are. There's been a growth in apartments, right? So
uh-huh.
we've built a lot of apartments. We've attracted people to our community.
So those people need places
you
to
need
store
places
their
to
stuff,
store
right?
Things, yeah. Right.
Okay.
And then older people that are coming here, they buy a smaller place. They don't really want to get rid of all their goods yet,
uh-huh.
right? It's hard for them to separate.
Yes.
So they put it in storage, and eventually after 4 or 5 years, they're like, hey, I don't need this anymore. Or the kids grow up, and they'll take some of it.
Yeah, but have we kind of reached the max point?
I think so. You know, some people think they're still, you know, they
can build a little room to grow.
Well, they can build a better mousetrap and all. But there are certain markets that, you know, definitely.
All right, Hank. And Hank Amos with us from Tucson Realty and Trust. What do we still need to cover?
Office.
Okay.
So what's happened in office? So the office market has, on the onset since the pandemic, has really stabilized in conditions, but conditions are kind of stuck in neutral, right? So you can just say office is treading water right now.
Why? Because people don't work in offices anymore?
That's one of the big things right now. So that there's a reduced demand for office. Mainly because that flexible work arrangement that's going on right now. And then businesses are concerned about signing a 5-year lease, right? Most leases are 5 years or some at three, but most are five. And so I don't know what the economic conditions are going to be. And so they're a little hesitant. So because of that, the office market is kind of treading water right now. Vacancies at 9.2%.
That's pretty high. Nine.
But remember, But our vacancy rate's doing better than the national average.
And the national average is probably 16% or something, isn't it?
I don't know exactly,
but
it's definitely higher.
Yeah.
And then our lease rates were at $23 a foot, maybe 23.5. Our rents are about 20% less than Phoenix, and when compared to major California markets, it's 50% less. And those that get the highest rates are medical. You know, they're doing really well.
One thing we didn't cover, land use. Is that still a market?
It is, but I see land sales kind of slowing down for a couple reasons. So I don't see the home builders building as much because everybody's kind of concerned where the, you know, are we going to have a recession? What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. By the way, new home subdivision sales, they're killing it, right? So they've had a really good run, but what they're doing is they're subsidizing the rent. So the first year might be 2.85%. The second year is 3.85%. The fourth year is 4.85%.
It's ballooning.
Yeah, but it's still lower. It's
yeah.
not 7. The fifth
yeah.
year is 5.85%.
Okay, so they're getting creative and getting people in that way.
Stuck that way for the next 26 years, right? They're paying 1% closing costs, up to 1% of the closing costs. Of the thing, and then they're throwing in a refrigerator and a washing machine.
Oh, can't beat that.
So Hank, they're doing great.
All right, Hank Amos, good to see you, and always appreciate the detail that you go into, and it's a lot of good content there. Thanks, Hank.
Thank you.
All right, on behalf of Mr. Amos and Tom, engineering and producing our show, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.